Carpentry is my hustle. But for small business insurance, I need my State Farm agent. They're small business owners too, so they know how to help you best. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Call your local State Farm agent for a quote today.
Soon millions will make Medicare coverage decisions for next year, and UnitedHealthcare can help you feel confident about your choices. For those eligible, Medicare annual enrollment runs from October 15th through December 7th. If you're working past age 65, you might be able to delay Medicare enrollment depending on your employer coverage. It can seem confusing, but it doesn't have to be. Visit UHCMedicareHealthPlans.com to learn more. UnitedHealthcare, helping people live healthier lives.
I'm always upgrading my car. Not because I need to, because I want to. Today, it's custom rims for my ride. Tomorrow, it might be a new driver's side seat cushion. And ebaymotors.com always has what I need. They've got over 122 million car parts, all at the right price. That's perfect for me, because I'm a car guy.
Are you still in the garage? It's 2 a.m.
Almost done. Okay, I'm a car fanatic. eBay Motors. Let's ride.
And we continue here with Our American Stories. Pilot and world champion runner Orville Rogers trained bomber pilots in World War II, flew the B-36 on secret missions during the Cold War, ferried airplanes to remote Baptist missions all over the world, and squeezed in a 31-year career as a pilot with Braniff Airways. Orville also took up running at age 51 and ran his first marathon 6 years later. But now, let's hear the story, the life story, of Orville Rogers.
1927, Lindbergh flew the first solo flight nonstop from New York, landed in Paris. He made a tour of the central United States, and deliberately he circled every schoolhouse he could find, and he circled our schoolhouse. My first airplane ride, that was a fun experience. I think I was about 10 or 11 years old in Sulphur, Oklahoma. I was in the yard one day, and a plane flew over very low. And it looked like he was going to be landing. So I jumped on my bike and rode out, and sure enough, he landed. So I went over and talked to him. He said, yeah, I'm giving rides, $4. So I had to go back home and break my piggy bank and get the $4 out to come back and get my first airplane ride. I didn't tell my parents about it until much later. It was a wonderful experience, and it cemented my idea of becoming a pilot. My father deserted my mother and my sister and me when I was 6 years old. And my mother took us back to her parents. So we grew up in the home of my grandparents. And he was a farm man. They were not very loving in a obvious way. I knew my grandfather loved me, but he never told me so. But it worked out okay because I eventually came to terms with the realization that that was just their way of life. As a senior at Oklahoma University, I received the impression, I thought it was from God, that I ought to be in vocational Christian service in order to really serve God the best. That was a wrong impression, but in order to prepare for whatever God had for me, I knew I had to go to the seminary. So I came to seminary in September of 1940, and I think it was 5 weeks later, they held the first drawing for the draft for World War II service. There was a giant fishbowl in Washington, I think it was about 5 feet in diameter, that held slips of paper with numbers on them from 1 to 1,000. Well, so help me, my number was drawn out, number 7. And so I heard from the draft board almost immediately. So I went down and talked to them, and I said, hey, I don't want to be in the walking army. Can I enlist in the Army Air Corps? They said, sure. So I enlisted in the Army Air Corps and was accepted and had my pre-induction physical. And they didn't call me up right away, but that was God's way of turning me around from my impression that I ought to be in vocational Christian service, and told me that I could serve God as well or a whole lot better as a layman. I enlisted in the Army Air Corps November the 1st, 1941, 5 weeks before Pearl Harbor. And we heard about it one Sunday afternoon. We got the word when they turned the radio on that Pearl Harbor had been bombed. I was in training in San Diego flying a primary trainer. After graduating from flying school, the second lieutenant pilots would be assigned to different bases. My instructor in the advanced training school recommended that I become an instructor. So all of my World War II flying career, I was in the training command, instructing other students how to fly an airplane. We lost a large number of pilots, student pilots and instructor pilots, to training accidents during the war. They were in such a rush to get the pilots to the front because we needed them badly there. And so the program was accelerated to the point that it really was quite dangerous. And I flew B-25s for over 2 years, instructing in the advanced phase of the flying training program. And I loved that airplane. It was a bomber and a very effective one. At the end of the war, I was assigned to training in the B-17. I reported to my training base for B-17 training about 3 days after they dropped the first atomic bomb. So then they dropped the second one, and the war was over. I went ahead and finished my training in the B-17, but never got to use it. And I was separated from the Air Corps shortly after that. In April of 1951, I was recalled to the Air Force, as they called it then, and I was assigned to Carswell Air Force Base in Fort Worth, flying the B-36, our primary defense weapon against an attack by Russia. We were on call 24 hours a day. If war had been declared, we would have loaded our atom bomb in Fort Worth, Texas, flown to Goose Bay, Labrador, refuel there, and then take off from there to bomb our assigned target in Russia. The B-36 at that time was the largest airplane in the world. It was longer than a B-29 and a B-17 nose to tail. That's a lot of airplane. We had a crew of 15 people, and I loved flying that airplane. I had always wanted to fly the big airplanes. We had no problem with dropping a bomb, although we knew what destruction it could cause. But I think everybody in my squadron, certainly on my crew, had accepted the fact that we signed up to defend our country. And while that possibly meant the destruction and the loss of life of many people, we were prepared mentally and psychologically in every way to accomplish that. 52 years later, in 2004, my wife and I were on a Russian cruise ship. We sailed from St. Petersburg to Moscow through the river and canal systems, and we docked on the northwest side of Moscow after stopping twice in cities en route to minister to the physical and spiritual needs of the Russian people. We had 5 doctors on board the ship and 10 nurses, and many of the people would be street witnessing, giving away English Bibles, Russian Bibles, children's Bibles, and literature. The day after we docked in Moscow, we had a clinic there in a schoolhouse on a site that was probably less than 5 miles from where my target was in 1952, if war had broken out. I'm glad we didn't have to drop the bomb to begin with. And I'm equally glad that I was able to be a part of a Christian group going to the very same area where my target was 52 years before, taking them the Christian witness and telling them about our Lord Jesus. It was just a wonderful feeling to accomplish that, because instead of dropping death and destruction from above, we were carrying in the word of life on the horizontal plane, the word of life, eternal life, abundant life, available in our Lord Jesus. I met my wife at Oklahoma University. I had attended my freshman year in another school, and I enrolled at Oklahoma University, so I was a sophomore and met her when she was a freshman. She was dating another boy when I first met her my first year there, and they were pretty steady. It took a year or two, but finally we became engaged. But one night I woke up in a deep, depressive frame of mind, because I had dreamed that she was marrying him and I was attending their wedding. And that had a profound effect on me for a few days, a week or two, because I just couldn't stand the thought of losing her.
The story of Orville Rogers continues. More after these messages.
So you're in the garage working on your car, and you need the valves you bought last week. You look in the cabinets and on the shelves, but the parts are never in the right place. eBay Motors has the car parts you need. Over 122 million of them, all in one place, and all at the right prices. Find parts for everything from your classic coupe to your brand new truck at ebaymotors.com. Let's ride.
Hey, you guys, this is Tori and Jenny with the 9021 OMG podcast. We have such a special episode brought to you by Nurtec ODT. We recorded it at iHeartRadio's 10th pole event, Wango Tango. Did you know that Nurtec ODT Remedipant 75 milligrams can help migraine sufferers still attend such an exciting event like Wango Tango? It's true. I had one that night and I took my Nurtec ODT and I was present and had an amazing time. Here's a little glimpse of our conversation with some of our closest friends. This episode was brought to you by Nurtec ODT Remedipant 75 milligrams. Life with migraine attacks can mean missing out on big moments with friends and family. But thankfully, Nurtec ODT Remedipant 75 milligrams is the only medication that is proven to treat a migraine attack and prevent episodic migraines in adults. So lively events like Wango Tango don't have to be missed.
Doing household chores can already be time-consuming and tedious, and there's nothing more daunting than facing piles and piles of laundry that need to be done. I mean, that can be overwhelming for anyone. So if you want to get those larger laundry loads done right and get back to your life, try all free Clear Mega Packs. All free Clear Mega Packs are bigger packs with two times the cleaning ingredients compared to a regular pack, so that you can tackle any laundry load without the worry. All free Clear Mega Packs are also 100% free of perfumes and dyes, and they're gentle on skin, which is great for any family's sensitive skin needs. Which my family, we definitely have sensitive skin. So the next time the whole family gets home from long vacation, or you get the kids back from summer camp, or whatever the situation is that's caused this big pile of dirty clothes, just know that all free Clear Mega Packs, they have your back. Purchase all free Clear Mega Packs today and conquer any laundry load for all fabric types.
And we continue here with Our American Stories. And after flying the B-36 on secret missions during the Cold War, Orville Rogers became a commercial airline pilot and a missionary pilot for Wycliffe Bible Translators. In this segment, you'll also be hearing from Orville's doctor, Kenneth Cooper, founder and chairman of the Cooper Institute. By the way, Dr. Cooper is also my doctor. Let's continue with Orville Rogers' story.
I always enjoyed knowing that I was delivering people to their destinations safely and comfortably. Well, I flew for Braniff for a little over 30 years, and I loved it. I would have flown for nothing, but I was glad they paid me for it. Braniff Airlines started up with a route structure that only included two cities, Oklahoma City and Tulsa. It was a single-engine airplane, but they soon graduated to the DC-3, and they were flying from Dallas to Chicago and gradually expanding. Started out on the DC-3, and I flew the Convair 340 and 440, and it was taken over by the DC-6 series, and then we had a DC-7, and then eventually got up to the DC-8, and then to the Boeing 727 for most of my flying. But I enjoyed flying the DC-8 to South America. It was a beautiful airplane. It was a long-range airplane. We flew it nonstop from New York to Buenos Aires. It was a 10-hour and 20-minute flight, and I think it was the longest nonstop flight in the airline business at the time we were flying it in 1976 and 1977. I really enjoyed that flight, but I enjoyed all of South America. I met the founder of Wycliffe, William Cameron Townsend, in our church in 1965, and I volunteered to help out with Bible translation and particularly the aviation part of it. And I realized that while I had about maybe a dozen Bibles in my house, there were people groups of the world that didn't have to have one word of God's word in their own native language. Just felt like I could be of service in God's kingdom by helping deliver airplanes to the translators around the world who were there aiding the cause of Bible translation by the safe, efficient transportation where the roads were difficult or impossible. Well, I delivered 46 missionary airplanes in my career. They were challenging because you don't go down to the filling station and buy a road map. You have to be prepared for the over-ocean flying, which means the airplane must be equipped with additional radio equipment. It must have additional fuel for the long flights, either Europe or Africa or Southeast Asia, wherever you may be going. Because you look on a globe or a map at the Pacific Ocean and you see islands scattered all around everywhere. But when you get out there and fly it, you can fly for hours and hours and never see an island. So if the radio station on that island went out, or if you had difficulty with your receiver, you'd be on your own looking for throughout that vast expanse of water to find that tiny little dot of an island down there. So it's a grave concern to be able to navigate successfully. Took my first ferry flight for George in 1965. About a year or two later, they put me on their board, and I was on their board for 39 years. That's remarkable. I can't believe it. And three or four years later, the board chairman retired, and they made me chairman of the board. So I was chairman of the board for 13 of those 39 years, and it was a delight to serve God that way. And let me tell you about the climax of every missionary ferry flight. When you taxi into the ramp, open the door and hand the keys to the airplane to the missionary pilot already there who's going to be flying that airplane in the work of Bible translation. I read a book by Dr. Kenneth Cooper when I was in Chicago on a layover from our Braniff Airways flight, and I literally read it through in almost one sitting. And it was a highly motivational book. I started running the next day, and I've run a little over 42,500 miles in the last 50 years.
Your feet are in remarkably good condition for a person who has run for as long as you have.
My person looks good for a man of any age.
Get real deep. So he has a 2.5-inch expansion, which is very good. Don't let me push it out. Hold it real tight, real tight, real tight. And that's like iron. You have very good quadricep muscle strength. Yeah, Orville, at 100 years of age, you're like a man about 60. So
you have
slowed down the aging process, as you know. There's very few people past 100 years of age who can begin to keep up with you, even be alive, as you know.
Yeah, my objective is to slow down as slowly as possible.
Slow down as slowly as possible. And you've proven, too, what I've said for years. It's fascinating to know that one can grow healthier as one grows older, and not necessarily the reverse. Who determines that? You do. Here you're 100 years of age. Yeah. I'm 87 years of age, still practicing medicine every day. So we're enjoying life the fullest, and our goal for you and for me both is to live that long, healthy life the fullest and then die suddenly. We call that squaring off the curve.
Yeah.
And you've already passed that. But you know, as we tell people coming to our clinic, we call them getting Cooperized, following all the recommendations we give to our patients, over 145,000 patients now. If you follow recommendations for diet and weight and exercise, all the various things that we recommend, men, that you should live 10 years longer than the national average.
Wow.
That would mean you should live 87 years. I'm already 87 trying to prove that, and you're way beyond that.
I started running early on with a group called the Cross Country Club of Dallas, and it was competitive, but in a friendly way. And I gradually outgrew the group, outaged them, and I looked around, and the world records seemed to be attainable. So a little over 10 years ago now, when I was approaching 90, I looked up the world records for the 1 mile and the 800 meters. And I thought, maybe I can do that. So I engaged a trainer, and he coached me on starting and breathing and pacing. And I went to Boston 10 years ago. I ran the 800 meters in world record time. I think I broke the record by about 30 seconds. But I really slaughtered the mile. I think the record was 11 minutes and some seconds. And I attacked it vigorously and finished with a time under 10 minutes. I think it was 9:57 something or other. And I'm still the only man in the world that had run a 10-minute mile after the age of 90. I like that. In March this year, I attended the National Indoor Championship Meet near Washington, D.C. It was a track and field meet. I entered 5 running events ranging from 60 meters up to 1,500 meters and had no competition, so I got gold records just by showing up and suiting up, starting and finishing. But the icing on the cake was that I was able to set 5 new world records, one for each of the 5 events that I entered. So I now hold or have set 18 world records. I think 2 or 3 of them have been broken, but I have set 18 world records officially.
And what a story this is, Orville Rogers' story. And we'd like to thank the folks at Vision Video for giving us access to their wonderful documentary, Flying High for the Glory of God, The Orville Rogers Story. Check out their full documentary and the 1,900 more titles of uplifting family-friendly videos at visionvideo.com. Orville Rogers' story continues here on Our American Stories.
So you're in the garage working on your car, and you need the valves you bought last week. You look in the cabinets and on the shelves, but the parts are never in the right place. eBay Motors has the car parts you need. Over 122 million of them, all in one place, and all at the right prices. Find parts for everything from your classic coupe to your brand new truck at ebaymotors.com. Let's ride.
Hey, you guys, this is Tori and Jenny with the 9021 OMG podcast. We have such a special episode brought to you by Nurtec ODT. We recorded it at iHeartRadio's 10th pole event, Wango Tango. Did you know that Nurtec ODT Remegipant 75 milligrams can help migraine sufferers still attend such an exciting event like Wango Tango? It's true. I had one that night and I took my Nurtec ODT and I was present and had an amazing time. Here's a little glimpse of our conversation with some of our closest friends. This episode was brought to you by Nurtec ODT Remegipant 75 milligrams. Life with migraine attacks can mean missing out on big moments with friends and family. But thankfully, Nurtec ODT Remegipant 75 milligrams is the only medication that is proven to treat a migraine attack and prevent episodic migraines in adults. So lively events like Wango Tango don't have to be missed.
Doing household chores can already be time-consuming and tedious, and there's nothing more daunting than facing piles and piles of laundry that need to be done. I mean, that can be overwhelming for anyone. So if you want to get those larger laundry loads done right and get back to your life, try All Free Clear Mega Packs. All Free Clear Mega Packs are bigger packs with two times the cleaning ingredients compared to a regular pack so that you can tackle any laundry load without the worry. All Free Clear Mega Packs are also 100% free of perfumes and dyes, and they're gentle on skin, which is great for any family's sensitive skin needs. Which my family, we definitely have sensitive skin. So the next time the whole family gets home from long vacation, or you get the kids back from summer camp, or whatever the situation is that's caused this big pile of dirty clothes, just know that All Free Clear Mega Packs, they have your back. Purchase All Free Clear Mega Packs today and conquer any laundry load for all fabric types.
And we return to the story of Oral Rogers and his Dr. Kenneth Cooper, founder and chairman of the Cooper Institute, located in Orville's hometown of Dallas, Texas. But both of these guys, well, they come and hail from Oklahoma. We will also be hearing from Orville's daughter, Susan, his sons, Rick and Bill, and his great-grandson. Let's begin with Dr. Ken Cooper.
First of all, it's not that amazing anymore. People live past 100 years. They're becoming quite readily known. But people past 100 years of age who are still competing athletically in running events, that is extremely unusual. One out of a million, I would say. So Orville he's had his problems. He was a marathon runner and all when I first met him at age 54, that's 46 years ago, I did his first examination here at the clinic in 1971. I followed him every year after that, too. But what has happened is he's had some medical problems back in 1993. All of a sudden, we discovered he had severe coronary disease without any chest pain whatsoever when he had a six-vessel coronary bypass procedure. That was 1993. Then in 2011, he had a major stroke that occurred in 2011. But he's only incapacitated for 30 days. He's out back running again.
One aspect of my running is that it gives me a platform to speak a word for my Lord Jesus. I became a Christian when I was 10 years old, and I've tried to follow my Lord for 90 years now.
I've run in races where people alongside me or near me would falter just a little bit as they approached the finish line, 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 yards. It seemed like they were saying to themselves, there's the finish line, I've made it, and they kind of relax and slow down a little bit. That's not my style. I will power through running to the very end of the tape, and it served me well. A year ago in Albuquerque, I was running against a 94-year-old man, and he got off, there's just the two of us in a 60-meter race, and he got off to a fast start. I don't have fast twitch muscles, which enables a fast start in running, and so he was 3 or 4 yards ahead of me almost immediately. But I kept plugging away and maintaining the pace that I thought would be applicable to that distance. And he must have slowed down because I certainly wasn't speeding up, but I began gaining on him at the halfway mark, and at the finish line, I leaned forward just enough to beat him by 0.05 of 1 second. There's a magazine article that came out with a statement that we had met 5 times after that race, and I beat him every time. And I don't want to slow down at the finish line. I don't want to be disqualified by not serving my Lord well all through every day of my life. I want to finish strong for my Lord, don't you? I hope you enjoy life as much as I do. I love life.
My son was a Marine helicopter pilot, and was on a rescue mission in Vietnam in 1970 and was killed when they ran into very adverse weather conditions in the extraction process.
Well, God can use any experience of life to the benefit, and one of the good things that came out of this was the realization that Curtis lived a wonderful life, and he died in service for our country, and if it had to happen, that was the best way it could. My advice to anyone in a similar situation would be that God is still in control. He knows what is happening, and he is in control, and he can be relied upon to supply you comfort and help anytime it's needed. My wife and I served for 13 months in Tanzania. I had a beautiful Cessna 210 flying over Tanzania, which is as big as Texas and part of New Mexico. The interesting part about that trip was when we left Honolulu, I had not explained to my wife that radio waves are straight line, just like sunlight. And once you fly about 100 miles or so, depending on your altitude, away from your home departure station, you lose radio contact. So I was halfway to Johnston Island or so and trying to work anybody that would talk to me, and nobody would talk to me. I wanted to make a position report. And I sensed that maybe she was getting a little bit nervous about the situation because I was using the loudspeaker and she could hear the conversation. So I took off my headset and laid it down and put my bike down. I reached over and gave her a big hug and I said, "Honey, when you married me, did you ever think you'd be having this much fun?" She didn't hit me. I'm free to express my life story in that manner if my viewers understand that I'm doing it as a Christian witness. I want no glory for it. I want no commendation for it. But I found out early in life that it would be wise to save enough money as possible and invest it so that in the future I could be a vehicle for helping God's work, bringing His kingdom to earth from heaven as He asked us to do. And so I got interested in investing. I invested in the stock market, in land, and oil and gas. And God blessed in that. If people ask me, how did I do that? I say, I did not do it. God did it. And it was our privilege, and I, since my wife's death, to give away over $35 million to God's work.
I knew that Dad flew a lot, but it never felt like he missed important things like piano recitals or football games or anything.
And he's getting us back for that now. By going to, we're going to his track meets and interviews and banquets and birthdays. So
every day's a gift, and I think he is the one that really epitomizes that. I mean, he knows it every day's every day, every year, and it just it gives us a great sense of purpose and looking toward the future. And I think that's the way he's made it from 90 to 100 for sure.
I remember when he first realized he couldn't run a sub 10-minute mile anymore. And my friends in their 60s all say, "I can't run a sub-10-minute mile," and they're in their 60s. Yeah. They can't remember when they could run a sub-10-minute mile, so it's pretty fun.
We try to keep him humble. I mean, I tell him all the time that I could do what he does and be in the newspaper the next day, too. But the only problem is I'd be in the obituary section, and he's in the sports section.
One of my big memories of my dad and my mom was looking in their bedroom and seeing them on their knees praying. It was regular, and not for show. They were prayerful people and made it just a core to their life. And they're always reading the Bible. And they prayed through the missionary prayer list, which I don't know if it bothered them. It made me kind of crazy sometimes. But they prayed for every Southern Baptist missionary on their birthday throughout the whole year. It's pretty amazing discipline.
I'm in track right now. And I just think that it's great having a grandpa that is 100 running track. So when I run, I just think about him a lot. So I just think that's great.
My dad and my mom wanted to be with us on vacations. There's a lot of people that talk to them and say, "What? You know, that's not a vacation if your kids and grandkids are there." But he started it over 30 years ago. And we go on fabulous trips. every summer, and it's a job now coordinating that many people. So it's over 30 people for over 30 years going together someplace crazy, anywhere from the North Pole to Antarctica to Europe or Africa. But they've been an amazing way for this family to bond.
I enjoy reading and studying Hebrews 12, 1 and 2, because Paul speaks there of running as being a metaphor for living. And I think I can quote it. It says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us cast aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and henceforth is set down at the right hand of the throne of God."
And what a story we just heard. What a life well lived, in his hundreds and still running, and running being a metaphor for life. His faith, a fundamental part of his life. The kid's vision of the parents sitting in that room, kneeling down and praying for other people. And we tell their stories here on this show, just as we tell everyone's stories. Faith, no faith, no difference to us. Beautiful stories are beautiful stories. That he gave away $35 million that he'd made investing because he didn't think it was his. My goodness, what a story to tell by itself. And what a heart, what a generous heart. And by the way, that he lived so long, you know, we do a lot of these stories about living longer and cutting down costs and living better. These are stories that the Cooper Clinic has turned us on to, Ken Cooper's life work, and the work with Chuck Stetson and his family office, better living at lower costs. And my goodness, this story is a metaphor for all of those things. Orville Rogers' story here on Our American Stories.
I know pet grooming, but for small business insurance, I need my State Farm agent. They're small business owners too, so they know how to help you best. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Call your local State Farm agent for a quote today.
Soon millions will make Medicare coverage decisions for next year, and UnitedHealthcare can help you feel confident about your choices. For those eligible, Medicare annual enrollment runs from October 15th through December 7th. If you're working past age 65, you might be able to delay Medicare enrollment depending on your employer coverage. It can seem confusing, but it doesn't have to be. Visit UHCMedicareHealthPlans.com to learn more. United Healthcare, helping people live healthier lives.
This is the start of a new era.
We have an opportunity to build a better future for everyone.
Combining the best of humanity and the technology, we will unleash our imagination.
Everything that can be connected will be connected.
We as an industry must dare to dream.
So we find ourselves at a critical juncture in human history.
See, touch, and experience the very latest in technology.
Meet us at MWC Las Vegas, September 28th through the 30th.